Our special guest this morning, one Ms. Deb Lake, the executive director of the Traverse City Film Festival. So glad you're here, Deb. Good morning.
Good morning.
Deb, this is without a doubt your craziest time of year. Can you please just give us a little slice of what it is like to be you right now getting ready for the film festival?
It's so many voicemails that I can't even count how many are on my phone. My box fills up and emails that, sometimes I accidentally turn on that click that comes when each email comes in, and it just kind of sounds like a ticking clock.
So.
But it's fun. It's exhilarating.
And so many things to coordinate. So you have to figure out which films go to which venues.
Yes. Well, fortunately, I have a lot, like about 3,000 wonderful people helping put this little thing together.
Bless those people.
Yes, but there are a lot of moving pieces, that's for sure. We have 15 different venues that we set up around Traverse City, and so some of those are starting now, and then, of course, you got to shut them all down. So there's a lot going on.
A lot to do. Yeah. Now, Deb, of course, you would have to be a film buff, being the person that you are, but you really are a lover of movies.
I've loved movies since I was a little girl, so yeah.
Is there a particular kind of movie that you love, or is there something about film in general that just really speaks to you? All film? That's kind of, yeah.
I like to travel, so I like to take journeys to other places and other, you know, ways of being, and I think that's what I've always liked about it. Plus, it's a nice way to feel without getting hurt, the movies.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
It is. You can have that, and then you can set it home and say, that didn't really happen.
Right, exactly.
Right. I'm fairly devastated, but it didn't really happen, so that is true. Now, you have got a lot of great pieces here, and you're talking about kind of how we talk about music creating emotional impact and how these pieces of music create emotion in film. And we're starting right off the bat. This is an interesting choice because this is music by Karl Orff, right? The Music for Kinder. And this was music that he specifically wrote for children to be able to play. He created special instruments. He wanted them all to play in their schools. And he even wanted teachers to take that music and then rearrange it themselves and rewrite it for the skill levels for their own students. And so this was a big revolutionary project of his to get children playing music and to try to get them to speak that musical language. But it also created some really fascinating compositions, all that work.
Hmm. Well, the film is Badlands by my favorite laconic filmmaker, Terrence Malick, who also did Tree of Life and Days of Heaven, great American filmmaker. And this film has been called Ferociously American, which I would agree with. And it's about two lovers who are on a crime spree being pursued across the vastness of America. And it is an incredibly interesting juxtaposition. The music itself is not acrimonious in the least, and it really brilliantly underscores Martin Sheen's antisocial behavior, if you will. He uses his gun almost like a magic wand with which he kind of gets rid of things that annoy him. And it's a brilliant film. The music is, perfect for underscoring what he's all about. So.
And what's happening in the film while we're hearing some of this music?
It's throughout the film. And I think that's why I'm glad we're starting with this one. This music is not just in one place. It's not really used as a leitmotif. It's just actually like almost like the theme, and it's used in many different ways throughout the entire film. And if you haven't seen Badlands, it's definitely worth checking out.
Thank you.
I just love that music.
It's so happy.
It is so happy. And, you know, there are happy parts of this film about the crime spree and murder. So you have a very young Martin Sheen who looks a lot like James Dean, and he falls in love with an even younger Sissy Spacek. And so within a couple of days, he's killed their father, who didn't approve of him for some reason, and sets our house on fire, and they're on the run. But, you know, there are parts where, you know, they build this, like, tree fort in the woods, and, of course, she's not 100% thrilled. She's like, I would like to have good food. I would like to take a shower. But, you know, but he's having a lot of fun. And, you know, it's very, very happy music. I feel like making this film sound terrible, but it is, you know, and I was thinking about, you know, another one of my favorite songs by Bruce Springsteen called Badlands. And, you know, anyway, so many tie-ins all over the place.
That's kind of how that works.
It is.
So that's art. Spreads,
it does.
As it were. So that, well, and again, that's a great juxtaposition, hearing this, because if you think about this xylophone and this childish kind of thing will take you into, if he's in a happy place, it's kind of a childishly happy place.
It is very childishly a happy place. And he's, you know, he's, you know, Malick said he's like desensitized, but if, and that's where he's coming from. And I wouldn't, children are the opposite of desensitized, but I think that the music speaks more to, you know, what the experience I have of this character, which is he's living a childish life in a majestic world. So.
Oh, that's great. Now we're going to get majestic, actually, in just a minute. I want to let you all know this is Classical IPR, Interlochen Public Radio, WIAA Interlochen, WIAB Mackinac City, WICV East Jordan, and 94.7 in Traverse City. I'm Kate Botello here with Deb Blake, the executive director of the Traverse City Film Festival. And our next piece of music is so giant and so epic, and in some ways kind of defines the film that it's in.
It really does. So we're talking about Woody Allen's Manhattan from 1979, which is one of my favorite Woody Allen films, which is not saying a lot because I think I have about 15 favorite Woody Allen films. But this one, and many of Woody Allen's films have New York as a character. Right. But I think this one foremost among all of his films, and I love New York, and I know you love New York, this is the opening of the film, and so this is about a twice divorced comedy writer who's dating a 17-year-old, who's Meryl Hemingway, but he falls in love with his best friend's mistress, Diane Keaton. So that's the story, but it starts out with him. With a montage of images of Manhattan, and you hear this song. And of course, all of the soundtrack of this film is Gershwin. But this is the perfect way to begin the film. Thank you. feels just like a walk up Broadway.
It really does, with the traffic.
With the traffic. So I guess Woody Allen decided he wanted to shoot the film in black and white to give New York City a great look, and that music gives it a great feel. And he was trying in this film to do a cross of, if you know Woody Allen's films, a cross between Annie Hall and Interiors, which is a very interesting idea he had. But I think, Gershwin wrote this song, or got the idea for this particular piece, while he was riding on a train to Boston. And I can feel that. I can feel that in the music, the train and the, you know, the pulse, the musical kaleidoscope of America.
Absolutely. And again, you know, he edits it so well, because the big chord, and there's another big building, and the buildings just look so magnificent in the film, and they go with the music, and you see them in a way maybe you hadn't seen it before. That was just a bank. No, it's a bank.
A bank. The bank.
The bank. By the way, for those of you with attentive ears, don't know if you caught that, but our piano soloist for that performance was none other than the composer. That was Gershwin setting down. He did play a performance of Rhapsody in Blue on a piano roll. There's some argument as to whether or not did it capture dynamics or not, but I think it does a pretty good job, and it's really great to hear those fingers fly and know where that's coming from. So kind of a great perspective to take from that. Now, our next piece of music, Deb Lake, also introduces giantness, but in a very different way.
That is correct. So, and the piece by Strauss, which is, of course,
also Sprech Zarathustra.
Yes, I'm letting Kate do all the foreign pronunciations today. Is, of course, it was used in so many films, but perhaps most famously in Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is a film we showed at the second film festival when we did the complete retrospective of all of the feature films of Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right?
So that's a lot.
As I was looking at the pieces I chose, I realized in many cases, because I was hoping, like, at a different time of year, I would have rewatched all these films and, you know, like, really basked in the, like, you know, looked again at the way exactly they were used. But this time of year, the best thing to do is just to pick pieces that are used at the beginning of films. Easier to find, quite quick. Let's play the first 5 minutes of the film. So, but this is maybe the most famous opening scene. Well, one of them, anyway. There's so many good ones. But it's quite an amazing opening scene, and there have been books and essays and, you know, treatises written about the opening scene here. So you're looking at mankind, you know, in this film. You can look at the film as looking at mankind going from ape to godlike overman, and you've got, you know, the tie-ins between this piece and Nietzsche and the Uberman, and there's so much going on here, but it's absolutely sublime when you're seeing this ape, you know, go, you get really violent with the bone, and the bone flies into the air and turns into a spaceship. And this music is, I love it. Wow. So it's hard to believe that was composed in 1896. And it to me, it feels like it was written for this film.
It does. And yet it also feels so ancient.
Yeah, at the same time.
Yeah. Don't you wish that were your entrance music for everything? Just every time you walked into a room, that would just play for you.
I think that would be perfect for me. Yeah.
That was the scene with me and my toothbrush this morning, and I found it, aha! Anyway, yes, epic things. Of course, that was also Sprach Zarathustra by Richard Strauss. Seiji Ozawa led the Boston Symphony Orchestra in that performance. We have a lot of really familiar pieces that you might think of today, like, oh yeah, I know that, but in a completely different context. And I think that is what makes it so interesting. For instance, taking a piece of music, our next piece is something that most would think of, say, oh, last day of school. I think I play this at 3 o'clock on the last day of school every year, that kind of thing. It has a very different connotation. In the film that we're about to talk about, it has a really strange connotation. Let's talk about the next piece of music.
So we are going to move to another Kubrick film, this one from 1971, A Clockwork Orange, which is, I think, for me, one of the most difficult films to watch of any film I've ever seen. But yeah. I find myself returning to it. I don't know why. It's completely unpleasant to watch. But so there are multiple Ophidian references to Beethoven in this film, and it's specifically to the Ode to Joy. And in fact, at one point he listens to it. The main character, Malcolm McDowell, who was actually here at the second film festival, listens to it on this little mini cassette. I think there are multiple recordings of it in the film. I think my favorite is the synth version when he's picking up the girls in the record store. But I think we're going to listen to a different version right now.
We are. I like the ladies in the milk bar. Yes. They just happen to be singing Beethoven in the milk bar. And then, of course, later, he's tortured with Beethoven.
Yes, yes. I think, you know, it's... it's particularly poignant and perfect, the use of Ode to Joy and the multiple uses of it in this film. I mean, this piece itself, you know, goes from, you know, Adolf Hitler loved listening to it on his birthday. But it's also the official anthem of the European Union right now. You know, I mean, it was used as the anthem of the white supremacist regime in Rhodesia. It's, you know, and I think it really gets to exactly what Kubrick is trying to talk about in this film and, you know, the nature of human evil and crime in society. So. that Beethoven, he's no epigone. That music makes me feel like I can do anything. I had a roommate in college who used to use that to get through late night sessions. And I should do that too. I mean, I'm thinking, listening to it now, and I've got some all-nighters coming up here in the next couple of weeks. So you've got our anti-hero saying, you know, for the perfect end to the evening, what I really needed was a little of the old Ludwig von. And then he listens to it and he says, it's gorgeousness and gorgeousity made flesh. It's pretty good.
Oh, that's perfect. Lovely, lovely Ludwig von. Yeah. And again, though, in a context that you'd never think of it, using it in a disturbing context.
Yes, it's terrifyingly perfect to the way it's used.
Absolutely. It is. Yeah. We'll never think of Singing in the Rain the same way again, also,
right,
after that particular film. Now, it's 9:31, by the way. You're listening to Classical IPR. I'm Kate Botello here with Deb Lake. She's the executive director of the Traverse City Film Festival and playing some of her favorite film music for us today. And we have got some great pieces coming up for you. But this next one is from a new film in the film festival this year.
It is.
Cool.
It's one of my very favorite films. It's called Don't Leave Me in English, or I should also let you say this one.
Ne me quitte pas.
Yes. And the piece is, you should say the name of the piece.
A Pavane.
There you go. So this film is about, it was made by a couple of Dutch filmmakers, about two men living in the forests of isolated southern Belgium. They happened upon these two and decided to make this film. And it's hard to believe it's a documentary. It does not play at all like a documentary, but it is. And I wrote for the program guide that it's an infectiously lighthearted portrait of alcoholic friends who want to commit suicide. And I do think that's just about the perfect way to sum it up. We'll see what other people think. It begins with a quote from Waiting for Godot, however you say it, and actually, which is going to be performed at the Old Town Playhouse in September.
Yep, that's
so
coming up.
Very excited about that. And the whole film is like that. These two helpless, sad people, and this beautiful, cool, haunting music is throughout the film. So, and I was not really familiar with this piece, but I love it now, and I just absolutely think it's perfect for this film. Thank you. that doesn't quite capture the suicide part of the film. But at one point, he's walking through the forest, and he's one of the men, and he's like, I'm taking you to my tree of life, the tree that, you know, represents for me the great force of life. And then he gets there and he goes, oh, it's gone because they cut it. Somebody cut it down.
Oh, no.
It's really hilarious.
Oh, no.
I love it.
And there you go. So, okay, but then again is your juxtaposition of bright things with dark things. Yeah. We had that with the Orff. Yeah. We had that with the Beethoven. And we have that again with the Fauré.
Music does that better than anything else, I think.
I love it. That was the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra, by the way, performing Gabriel Fauré's Pavan. And again, you can hear that in the film Ne me quitte pas, that is at the Traverse City Film Festival. Now, our next piece of music, Deb, is from so many movies. Mm. So many movies.
Indeed. Recently, in the Hall of the Mountain King was in David Fincher's Social Network in the rowing scene, which you may remember. It's such a powerful scene.
Oh, so, yes.
They were going for something, a song that would match up with some kind of an Edwardian era garden party theme. But it's cut, it's edited in such a beautiful way with this song. But I was going to talk about, rather than a recent use, one of the first uses, which was in Fritz Lang's M, 1931, which was, yeah.
Shudder, shudder, shudder.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, I believe, one of the first films to use the leitmotif concept, which, of course, borrowed from opera. And so Peter Lorre, who's one of my favorite actors, and who's going to be starring in the Traverse City Film Festival because we're doing Casablanca this year in open space. So whenever he's coming or he's near or he's off screen, you're hearing this song, and he whistles it as he's going. He's a child murderer.
Oh, so that's
he's
right.
About to kill the children, which is terrible. He's whistling this piece. I guess Grieg wrote that he wanted to write something that reeked of Kaupat's ultra-Norwegianism and to thyself be enoughness with this piece. And yet, and so here you have it in this like perfectly German film that is this beautifully done by Peter Lorre, who, you know, great whistler.
a great whistler.
Actually, he didn't whistle. They had somebody else whistle for him.
I was trying to whistle along, right. I admit it. And it did not come easily with that piece.
No.
And then, of course, the M on the back of the coat.
Yes, the M.
The giveaway M. Well, since we're in a creepy frame of mind, good morning. Hope you're enjoying your Monday or your Tuesday, everybody. It is 9:41. I'm Kate Botello here with Deb Blake, the executive director of the Traverse City Film Festival. We are listening to some great film music. And since we are in a creepy frame of mind, we are moving forward again to a piece of music that is so gorgeous. And yet, Deb Blake.
And yet. Silence of the Lambs. So we're talking about, of course, Bach's Goldberg Variations in Silence of the Lambs, the great 1991 film by Jonathan Demme. And this is played, again, on a cassette player in the cell when Hannibal Lecter's breaking out of his cell. So he demands a second dinner, which is lamb chops, extra rare. And the guards bring it to him. And he's like, just another minute, please, because he's listening to the variations on his cassette player. And then, of course, bad things happen to the guards. And after he has eaten part of the face, he finishes listening to these, to this beautiful piece. And the mathematical precision and simplicity of apparent simplicity of the piece are oh so terrifyingly perfect for this scene. Thank you. So I have read that the variations were composed at the request of a count in Dresden who had a harpsichordist named Herr Goldberg, because the count could not sleep at night, and so he wanted something to be played to him in the evenings. And apparently it worked. But when I listened to the variations, of course, it doesn't help me sleep.
No, very unsettling dinner music.
Yeah.
And you know, when you think about it, I read one thing about Hannibal Lecter that he has in his mind a memory palace. Mm. So the way he remembers things is he has a whole palace full of rooms, and if he needs to remember, Clarice is standing in a room next to a lamb with a bottle of Lutèce on the table, that kind of thing. Everything he needs to remember is in that room. And he's the kind of guy that would be obsessed with the math in the Goldberg variations. And also that kind of simplicity would probably be very hypnotic to someone like that.
Yes, he eats people with mathematical precision.
And fava beans. Now, okay, our next piece of music. Also, this is another piece that can be used, is almost always used in a creepy or epic or ancient kind of sense.
It is very true. Another piece by Karl Orff, O Fortuna. And I was a little bit nonplussed when I realized that both of these pieces by Orff that we've done today were in Capitalism, a Love Story, which is, of course, the last film by the president and founder of the Traverse City Film Festival.
I
never realized that. Should have realized that, but didn't. Also, a little bit worried at myself that so many of the films I've chosen, we're going to talk about natural born killers here, are about lovers going on killing sprees. I'm not sure what that means, but I guess this has been called one of the most overused pieces of music in film history, but it's so perfect, right? I mean, it sets the mood for dramatic and cataclysmic situations. And of course, there are quite a few of those in this film by Oliver Stone. And, you know, it was interesting, this film, Natural Born Killers, the script was originally written by Quentin Tarantino. And I would have loved to have seen what the film would have been if he would have made it, because Stone made quite a few changes as he's wont to do.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it would have had a more wild and woolly, kind of a little more fun and a little less,
Yes.
Maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know. Or knowing Tarantino, it could be doubly, don't know.
Yeah. Probably would have had an equally brilliant soundtrack, however. The whole soundtrack to the whole soundtrack and score to this film is, as far as I'm concerned, perfect from beginning to end.
Thank you.
just says psychopathic serial murders to me.
It does. You know what else it says? Excalibur.
Excalibur.
This was so heavily used in Excalibur, I always associated it with that. But so then it takes that, you know, Arthurian majesty, and then it turns it into something else so entirely different.
They are not knights of the round table, no.
No, they're not knights of anybody's table. I don't think they're not knights of their own table.
Of their own table.
I'll tell you, thankfully, we have a little rest from the horror now. Mm. In fact, this is a perfect rest from the horror, because this next piece of music provided rest for horror from the characters in the film, yes?
It did. It's all about hope, all about getting through hard times with great art. So we're doing a little something from The Marriage of Figaro here and The Shawshank Redemption, which, you know, is definitely on what almost everybody's list of top 50 films ever.
Right.
So I didn't know that this was based on a short story by Stephen King called Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption. Of course, Rita Hayworth is the, not to have a spoiler, but she's the poster that's over the hole that he digs to get out of jail. So this is the piece that he plays over the loudspeakers to kind of get back at the warden. And he says in the film, I have no idea to this day what those two Italian ladies were singing about. I'd like to think they were singing about something so beautiful it can't be expressed in words, and it makes your heart ache because of it. Soaring human spirit, righteous rebellion, freedom. Of course, what they're singing about is a duplicitous love letter to expose infidelity. But, you know,
but also, they're singing about a gentle wind on the breeze, sure. And everything's a pretty, a song on the breeze.
A song on the breeze.
You know.
Yes, which it is in the film.
So. An unfaithful song on the breeze, but still a beautiful, somewhat unfaithful song on the breeze. Jen Blake. She is, of course, you are all listening to Kate Botello and Deb Blake this morning. Deb Blake is the executive director of the Traverse City Film Festival. Deb, tickets. How do we learn about all of, immerse ourselves in all things film festival?
Easiest way, tcff.org, the website. Box office is open downtown. It's at the corner of Front and Cass, and easy to find and easy to get to, open every day. You can stop by there, but go online. It's the best way. Tickets are available for friends of the film festival right now, but if you're not a friend, you can become a friend, and it's extremely affordable and a great way to get your tickets. Now, tickets go on sale to the public on Saturday at the box office and online. So.
And the Mahjong ladies are already lined up, so yeah. There you go. People camping out in line for the film festival. This is WIAA Interlochen, WIAB Mackinac City, WICV East Jordan Charlevoix, and 94.7 in Traverse City. Deb Blake, this has been such fun. Thank you so much for being here.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Let's send it all out with a bang, a huge piece of music.
A little bit of Wagner,
yay.
A little bit of Smell of Napalm in the Morning. So, of course, a little obvious, but great, truly great. Apocalypse Now, of course. So my father's favorite film was Heart of Darkness. And so I was, when I realized that there was a film that was, you know, based on that, I had to see it. And wow, what a film. So you have lots of crazy people in this film. But one who loves to surf in particular, who likes to mount speakers on helicopters when he's going after the enemy. And this is what he likes to play.